Thank you. At this time, the call is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone joining us. I'm Scott Pinzon, Policy Communications Director for ICANN, and welcome to our webinar helping introduce you to ICANN and our way of developing policies for the Internet. A little bit of housekeeping items before we get into the presentation. First of all, please mute your phone if you're not speaking. If you hear echo or strange noises or static, that's usually because we have too many open lines. So if you could please mute your phone, that will make a better experience for you and all of us. There will be opportunity to ask questions at the end of the session, and of course at that point you can unmute your line. But meanwhile, please keep it on mute. I've already mentioned that there is an Adobe Connect room for this. If you're just joining us, you can find a link to it in the email that you received with the meeting details. Now, I mentioned that there would be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the meeting. That's verbally, but in addition, during the session, you can submit questions in the chat box at the bottom of the Adobe Connect window. We'll do our best to answer every question during the session, but in case time does not permit, we also offer you an email address where you can follow up on anything discussed today, and that is the word policy followed by a hyphen or a dash, staff, S-T-A-F-F, at ICANN.org. So again, for follow-up, you can email policy-staff at ICANN.org, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you have. And then finally, at the end of the meeting, when you want to ask a question, you can either state your name and ask to be added to the queue, or Adobe Connect also provides a way you can virtually raise your hand. If you look in the lower left corner of your screen, you should see a little humanoid icon with his or her hand up. If you click on that, your name will pop to the top of the attendees list in the upper left, and it will have the little icon next to it, and we'll know that you have a question. And at the end, I will alternate between voice questions and virtual hand raises, hoping that everyone gets a chance. Just to remind you of today's objective, we hope to provide you with an overview of ICANN as an organization and the role of policy development at ICANN. And we'll be answering questions like, what is our mission? How does policy development work here? And it's a multifaceted achievement, so there are a lot of subgroups within ICANN addressing specific issues and topics. We'll cover some of those. And the point of all this is it's quite possible that in our multifaceted mission, we're addressing issues that align well with something that you or your organization also tries to accomplish. And so we're hoping to provide enough information that you can discern whether it might benefit you to take part in our activities. So we hope to provide enough information that you can decide that and also know what to do next. So that is what we're here for today. With that, that concludes our opening housekeeping duties, so I'm pleased to turn you over to Rob Hogarth to start our presentation. He's our Senior Policy Director. Rob?
Greetings, everyone. Thanks a lot, Scott. I'm somewhat intimidated seeing the list of attendees in the Adobe Connect. I'm tasked with giving a general overview of ICANN, and a number of the attendees either have or could have written books on the topic. But I'm going to try to keep it at a fairly high level, set some context for you in terms of what ICANN does, where we fit into the larger Internet ecosystem, and set up a number of my colleagues for some more detailed descriptions about ICANN, and in particular, the policy development process that we all have come to know and love as ICANN staffers. To start at the beginning, ICANN was formed in 1998. It's a not-for-profit partnership of people from all over the world who are dedicated to keeping the Internet secure, stable, and interoperable. As part of our mission, we hope that we promote competition and develop policy regarding the Internet's unique identifiers. Unique identifiers, what does that mean? Well, the concept in general is that ICANN acts as the central repository, the essential piece or operator or coordinator of the domain name system, which essentially exists to make the Internet accessible to human beings. As by way of background, the main way that computers make up the Internet or find one another is through a series of numbers, with each number, we call them IP addresses, correlating to a different device. However, it's been found that it's difficult for the human mind to remember long lists of numbers, so what the domain name system, or DNS, uses is letters or characters rather than numbers, and then provides links to a precise series of letters with a precise series of numbers. So, for example, the end result is that ICANN's website can be found at ICANN.org rather than 192.0.34.163, which is how computers on the Internet know it. Now, one advantage to this system, apart from making the network much easier to use for people, is that a particular domain name doesn't have to be tied to one particular computer, because the link between a particular domain and a particular IP address can be changed quickly and easily. The change will then be recognized by the entire Internet within a relatively short period of time. I think the current number is around 48 hours, thanks to the constantly updating character of the DNS infrastructure. And so the ultimate result is an extremely robust, extremely flexible system of allowing computers on the Internet to interconnect. Now, it's important to talk a little bit about domain names, but let's first chat about users. The slide you see on your screen is the global distribution of Internet users in 1990. And as you can see by the relative blobs there, the Internet back in those days was largely Western-based, largely English-speaking. And in a relatively short period, based on historical parameters, by 2007, we saw a much more balanced distribution of Internet users around the planet. And when you compare that to the time frame of ICANN's founding back in 1998, you can imagine an organization. We call ICANN, and many of the participants in ICANN call ICANN the Grand Experiment, essentially an organization that has grown, evolved, and developed with the Internet and with the distribution of Internet users around the planet. So now, when, you know, we look at what makes up the Internet and we see how many people are involved, how much businesses, organizations, communities around the world now involve themselves, we see a tremendous reliance on this technology, on this network. And it becomes every day much more critical that the system, that the network, that the DNS be secure, be stable, be interoperable. So when then someone comes along and says, well, what's ICANN and why should we be involved? The important thing is really understanding what ICANN does and how we fit into the whole ecosystem. So what you hear from people is, we do names, we do numbers, we're involved in helping to record or be a repository for parameters. And that means different things to different people. But let me take another quick step back and talk a little bit about names and numbers and how they fit into what ICANN does. The domain name itself is essentially two elements. There's one element that sits before and another element that sits after the dot, that famous dot. The part to the right of the dot, such as .com, .net, .cn, .nl, is known as the top-level domain, or TLD. One company in each case, called a registry, is in charge of all the domains ending with that particular TLD, and it has access to a full list of domains directly under that name, as well as the IP addresses with which those names are associated. So that's to the right of the dot. To the left, or before the dot, is the domain name itself that you as an individual registrant, an individual, a community group, an organization, actually registers. And that's the name which is then used to provide online systems such as websites, email, and so on. Now, in turn, I talked about the registries. These individual domains are distributed by a large number of organizations that we call registrars, and they also play an important role in ICANN. Now, ICANN has essentially over the years drawn up contracts with each registry, and it also runs an accreditation system for registrars. And it's these contracts that provide a consistent and stable environment for the DNS and hence the Internet. And it's the understanding, development, enforcement, and oversight of those contracts that takes up a lot of the policy development work, a lot of the conversations, discussions, and public policy debates that take place within ICANN. Now, we noted that ICANN also deals with, and I'm sorry, my slides have shifted. I didn't want to be on this one. But ICANN also does addresses. We play a similar administrative role with IP addresses used by computers as we do with domain names used by humans. In the same way that you can't have two domain names the same, otherwise you never know where you'd end up, for the same reason, it's also not possible for there to be two IP addresses the same. Somebody else is playing with the slides. If you could please stop that, because I'm trying to stay on track here. I don't know, Marika, if you can help out with that, but for some reason it's jumped ahead.
Yeah, I think we're having a technical issue here. I'll try to look into it. I know we had it happening in the past where the presentation played by itself. I'll try to
fix
it.
Thank you. It's not affecting the content, but you're all missing some of the beautiful photos and other things that Scott Pinzon helped develop. That would be terrible if you didn't have a chance to see those. Again, in terms of IP addresses, ICANN does not run the system, but it does help coordinate how IP addresses are supplied to avoid repetition and clashes that I alluded to. And we're also the central repository for IP addresses from which ranges of those addresses are supplied to regional registries who in turn distribute them to network providers. And my colleague, Ola Nordling, is going to be talking a little bit about that role in a little bit. Now, again, I want to take you back to what is ICANN and what do we do and how do we operate ourselves. I'm going to jump forward on my own slides on my laptop. I want to read to you from the Affirmation of Commitment, which is a document that the Department of Commerce here in the United States and the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, ICANN, signed just last September. And it does a really good job of summarizing essentially how ICANN operates within the context of this larger DNS ecosystem. And it's primarily five major points. One, ICANN is a multi-stakeholder, private sector-led, bottom-up policy development model for DNS technical coordination that acts for the benefit of all global Internet users. Those five points really sum up in total a lot of how ICANN operates, a lot of the principles that exist behind the scenes in terms of developing programs, developing capabilities, setting up systems for transparency, for accountability, and for a variety of other ways that different community groups operate themselves, how they interrelate, and how they interact with the ICANN board of directors. And each one of those is a very critical element. I've talked with you a little bit about DNS technical coordination, sort of what that interrelationship is, what it looks like. But it's also important to appreciate, in general, the need and the desire for there to be choice, for there to be competition, for there to be a lot of active players. I think we're seeing strings of that in the discussions that are taking place within the community right now about new IDNs being made available, about the potential for new generic top-level domains to exist as well. But it's critical that ICANN is a multi-stakeholder organization because as a private sector-led organization, we need to ensure that all the different groups can work together to develop Internet policy, to make sure that there are consensus positions developed, to make sure that potential problems or areas needing improvement are addressed in a comprehensive way, but also in a consistent and reliable way. That's a very important part about policy development. The other important aspect, of course, is when you're talking about this concept of private sector-led, it's that the users, the actors, the various stakeholders in the Internet ecosystem have an opportunity to develop their agendas, to develop the policies from the bottom up, not from a top-down system of order or rules or regulations, but a level of confidence and comfort that when a policy is put into place, it has been thoroughly researched, it's been thoroughly discussed, people have had an opportunity to participate in those discussions, and an opportunity to do that on literally a global basis. And once again, the presentation is moving forward. Needs to go back, please. These are all very important precepts of ICANN, where it started, where it's going, and how we operate on a daily basis. Now I'll turn to the ICANN structure. In general, you have to understand that because it's important to make sure that the various communities who are interested in the Internet or who have a stake in the Internet ecosystem participate, over the years ICANN has created various structures. As different communities have stepped forward and said, I need to be involved or I want to play a certain role in policy development and in the organization and operation of the DNS. And at present, the structure is set up with an ICANN board of directors being the central decision maker, but that those decisions are informed by advisory committees and supporting organizations. And as you can see from the slide on the screen right now, we've got four advisory committees who represent different segments of the community: governments, the root server system, the technical gurus, and the security and stability advisory committee, and the at-large advisory committee, and the general at-large community, meaning average internet users and others who either earn their livelihood or communicate on a regular basis for many different reasons on the internet itself. On the other side of the board of directors, you see the concept of supporting organizations, and that's where we'll spend the bulk of our time for the remainder of this session, talking about the address supporting organization, the generic name supporting organization, and the country code name supporting organization. These supporting organizations have policy development processes in place that they use to bring up issues, to make decisions, and to make recommendations to the board of directors, which then makes the final decisions, acts on the recommendations, or takes different pieces of advice. And just briefly, when you look at the ICANN board of directors, it's a total of 21 members. Only 15 of those members have voting rights, 6 are non-voting liaisons. It's important to note that the majority of the voting members, that's 8, are chosen by an independent nominating committee, and the remainder are nominated members from supporting organizations. So there's interest, and a fundamental structural element of ICANN is directed at making sure that there is a wide cross-section of members of the Internet community who have an opportunity to be involved in ICANN activity, and that is hardwired into the system. So within these structures, you have various parties who participate, and it's really an important component of your involvement in ICANN to really decide what your goals and expectations are. They may vary from issue to issue, but some of the chief ones that I've identified in my couple of years with ICANN is that we have parties and communities who are motivated to participate in ICANN for advocacy. They may represent or be an employee of an organization, a registry or a registrar. They may represent a business that conducts a lot of Internet commerce. They may be a particular organization that has opinions or points of view with respect to privacy or respect to individual rights. And so there's a real community of folks who are at ICANN to really dig into the hard and fast policy debates and discussions. There's also a large group of people who participate for information, for learning, for getting perspective, for seeing trends and determining where things are going. There's also a large class of folks who are here to help offer technical expertise, either because that's a personal passion, it's an area of interest, because they have a particular skill set that they feel that they can offer to the community. And so it's important when you're sort of approaching policy development to ask yourself, what is your motivation? Because depending depending upon that level of interest and motivation, you could find yourself, as some of our volunteer leaders do, working 10, 20, 30 hours.
This is Marika. I think Rob just got disconnected. We'll just give him a second to come back in.
Hello, this is Rob. I'm back in. Can anybody hear me?
Yes, we can. Please continue,
Rob. Great, thank you. I apologize for that. For those of you who didn't participate in the morning session, that went very smoothly. As I was touching on, it really is a critical element in terms of knowing what your expectations and goals are, because there are levels of commitment, and even some folks here on this call who devote tremendous amount of their time and effort, and a large amount of that time is volunteer time. Folks don't participate in ICANN just because they're paid to do it. They do it because they're interested, because it's important. And that's a really important aspect, particularly when the debates get hot and heavy, when people are truly passionate, to really appreciate that if you are participating in ICANN, not just an informational perspective, but it's typically because this is an area that really interests you. There's a realization that this is important. It's not everything in terms of internet governance, but it's a very critical point, very critical part of maintaining a secure and stable internet ecosystem. And so people are really committed. And without those volunteer efforts, the organization would not continue to be able to do what it does. I've already touched on the registries and registrars in terms of key actors and talked a little bit about sort of where they fit to the right of the dot or to the left of the dot. The other, of course, real critical element that is at the forefront a lot of policy development discussions is the registrants in that community, the recognition that so much of a secure and stable internet is there for service to the community and the people who use the internet the most, and that is and are the registrants, the individual domain users and operators who rely on the network. This slide is really the end slide of a 10-page presentation, but I included it simply to show that the ICANN ecosystem is not just registrars, registries, registrants, but there's a much broader community that fits into the structure, into the various supporting organizations and advisory committees. It includes the content publishers, the ISPs who provide the connectivity and services, and a whole host of others who contribute in different ways. It's a very dynamic community that many of you are already a part of, and remains very challenging in terms of really trying to understand what different groups are doing, what some of their goals and expectations are, and makes ICANN a truly dynamic arena in terms of policy development and policy conversations and discussions. In terms of the overall internet ecosystem, ICANN is just one piece. While our focus is on the domain name system, there are a whole variety of other groups, many of whom you are all parts of, that play very critical roles in the internet ecosystem. The purpose of this slide is just to show you that there is that panoply of which ICANN is just one piece. One other important element, I think, to mention is what ICANN doesn't do. ICANN's remit is quite focused in terms of its DNS work. There are aspects of that work that touch on a variety of areas with respect to Internet governance. But in brief, ICANN doesn't control content on the Internet. It can't stop spam. It doesn't deal with access to the Internet per se. But through its coordination role, the Internet's naming system, it does play an important role and has an impact on the expansion and evolution of the network, of the Internet. So it's important to know where those touchstones are. But when you start to talk about specific detailed issues of, you know, consumer protection law or data protection law or intellectual property law, this is not the primary environment, the primary arena for those types of discussions. But many of the people who participate in the policy development arena are very aware of these issues, aware of the touchstones and where all those pieces fit. And you'll see in a number of those discussions where some of these outside influences do bleed into the conversation and can play some important roles in the final consensus decisions that are made. Now, I think I'm going to generally stop here with just a final quick nod to some of the general examples of policy development at ICANN, and this just illustrates for you the wide range, ranging from, you know, something fairly broad like dispute resolution to much more specific issues like the transfer policy of domain names or restrictions on how different users of the Internet can pick up names and return them to the system. It's a real variety of both broad policy issues and technical coordination issues that really provide an opportunity for everybody who touches this in any way, shape, or form. I think I will stop there, Scott, and turn it back to you and Marika to now talk a little bit more specifically about policy development at ICANN and some of the organizations that actually operate in this community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rod. And to talk a little bit more about the policy aspects of what ICANN does, I now turn you over to Marika Konings, who is Policy Director. Go ahead, Marika.
Thank you very much, Scott. And as I said, we're now going to move into the details of policy development at ICANN. So who actually makes policy at ICANN? And as you can see here, there are the three bodies in ICANN that develop policy recommendations, each of which will be covered in further detail in the next slides. So first of all, there's a generic name supporting organization, or also known as GNSO, which deals with the generic top-level domain space, so .com, .net, .biz, .info. Then you have the country code name supporting organization, also known as CCNSO, which is responsible for the country code top-level domain space, so .us, .co.uk, .nl, .de. And lastly, we have the address supporting organization, or ASO, which is responsible for Internet address policy. It is worth pointing out that in all these instances, the ICANN board is the ultimate decision-maker on whether a policy is adopted or not. But in all of this, it's important to know that policy development is done through a bottom-up process, and Rob already referred to that as well in his presentation. That means open participation, which results in a diverse group of participants with different areas and levels of expertise and knowledge, with an objective to reach agreement by coming to a consensus. So the recommendations that are proposed and adopted have a broad base of support from different parts of the community. And Rob already referred to this as well, and some of you might have experienced it at first hand, but many people involved in ICANN are very passionate about the Internet and about their views, which can result in interesting exchanges of views that are often spirited, but also sometimes unrestrained and blunt. So how can you get involved? We'll discuss in further detail later on in the presentation how you can get involved in each of the different supporting organizations that develop policy. But I think it's also important to remember that before any decision is made or any recommendations is adopted, there is at least one, if not many more, public comment periods that are held in which anyone can express their views or opinion at the issue at hand. And these public comments form an intrinsic part of the policy development process and are required to be taken into account when policy recommendations are made. And as mentioned before as well, most working groups and initiatives are open to participation by individuals and our representatives, So you can also opt to contribute directly to the policy development process in that way. Now we're going to move on to the generic name supporting organization. So as mentioned before, the GNSO is responsible for the generic top-level domain space, which covers top-level domains such as .com, .net, .cat, .biz, .info, and some others I mentioned here. Currently, the GNSO consists of 21 counselors that come from 6 different constituencies and stakeholder groups, and 3 members that are actually appointed by the ICANN Nominating Committee, also known as NOMCOM. So here you briefly see the structure of the GNSO. The GNSO actually recently went through a reorganization and is now structured around 2 houses, one of which the contracted party house, which you can see on your left-hand side, which houses the registry and registrar stakeholder groups. And then on the other side, you have the non-contracted party house, which consists of the commercial constituencies, the business constituency, the IPC constituency, and the ISP constituency. And on the other side, you have as well the non-commercial stakeholder group in that house. So I won't spend too much time on the structure. If you're interested in that, there's a lot of information on the restructuring and the whole GNSO improvements process, as it's called, on the GNSO website, to link to which you'll find further down in the presentation. But it's just to give you an idea of which groups are represented in the GNSO Council. So how is policy developed in the GNSO? So the ICANN bylaws prescribe in great detail how a policy development process should be run when it concerns GNSO policies. And I think that's partly the reason why there's so much detail in there compared, for example, to a CCNSO policy development process, that in the GNSO, the outcome of some policy development processes that result in consensus policies, as they're called, they are contractually binding on the contracted party, so registries and registrars. So it's very important that, you know, clear processes prescribed for those kind of issues. It is worth pointing out that that process is currently under review in order to address a number of issues that have been identified that need improvement or can be further enhanced to optimize the policy development process. So basically, the process starts by an issue that's being raised either by the board, by one of the advisory committees or supporting the organizations, or by a member of the GNSO Council. Once there's been agreement that indeed this issue should move forward, ICANN staff prepares an issues paper. And in this paper, staff tries to gather as much as information as possible on the issue, on the different sides, the different views that exists, and it also includes an opinion from ICANN legal counsel on whether the issue is within the scope of ICANN's mission, which, as Rob has already explained, is specifically targeted to the technical coordination of the named system. So on the basis of that, then the council will decide whether they actually initiate a policy development process. And if it's a yes, a process will get started, a working group is convened, and as mentioned before, this is a working group, a call for volunteers goes out, and anyone interested can join up to such a working group. The only requirement is there that people submit a statement of interest, so it's clear what your interests are in the group and why what your intentions might be in participating. So this working group works on a very open basis. As I said, they normally have weekly or biweekly discussions of an hour and a half. They deliberate on the issues. They request public comments on the issue at hand. Constituents and stakeholder groups are also requested to provide their input on the issues that are being reviewed and discussed. And on the basis of that, the working group normally produces an initial report, which is then again put out for public comment and feedback before the group moves on to finalizing that report and submitting that to the GNSO Council for their consideration. So once the GNSO Council reviews those recommendations and adopts them, they are then forwarded to the board for its consideration. And once adopted, ICANN staff implements the proposed policy, which is normally accompanied as well by guidance either from the GNSO Council or the working group or the board on how implementation should be done. It's very important to know that each of these phases include a public comment period. So again, Every step of the way, there are different checkpoints where the community is being asked to provide input and give their feedback to make sure that the process is followed according to the consensus of the community. So just to give you an example, many of you might be familiar with the new GTLD process, which is currently in its implementation phase, but actually that started as well as a policy development process in which the different elements were outlined, discussed by the community until a broad consensus emerged with a number of recommendations on how the new GTLD program should look and which rules should be followed in that process. So this issue was raised in 2004. Staff prepared an issues report. The GNSO went ahead and initiated the PDP. And then there was a working group, as this is a very extensive issue, deliberated for 2 years before recommendations were adopted in 2007, after which the board adopted the policy recommendations, and which then marked the start of the implementation process, which is currently ongoing. Just to emphasize as well that this, you know, is not a typical example as such. I think, you know, a policy development does require time because you are required to explore the different angles of the issues, involve the different stakeholders, and make sure that, you know, you explore all the different options that you have at hand and try to assess as well the impact potential recommendations might have. So I think an average policy development process these days is you know, runs from start to finish in a year's time, more or less, depending on the complexity of the issue. So to give you an example of what some of the policies that are currently being discussed and developed in the GNSO, there are a number. The inter-registrar transfer policy is a consensus policy that was adopted in 2004 that basically prescribes how domain name registration should be transferred between registrars. It sets out the rules that need to be followed so there's a clear and transparent way in which you can transfer your domain name registration from one registrar to another. Once a policy was adopted, you know, as a way to review whether the policy was actually working as intended, a review was carried out and a number of issues were identified that needed further clarification or enhancement to make sure that the policy was working as intended. So one working group is currently looking at a number of issues that it is trying to address in that relation. Another working group, policy development process working group, is currently underway that's looking at vertical integration that has some relationship as well with the discussion in the new GTLDs and deals with questions on whether registries can own registrars and vice versa. And then there's also a PDP ongoing on post-expiration domain name recovery that addresses questions relating to what rights do registrants have after their domain name registration has expired? What opportunities should they have to be able to recover the domain name? And are the current agreements, are they clear and conspicuous enough for registrants to understand what will happen once their domain name has expired? So how can you participate in this process? As already mentioned, all GNSO working groups are open for anyone to join. If you don't have the time or the energy to be in weekly meetings, you know, mailing lists are always public, so you can check in there as well to see what the group is discussing. Recordings are made available of the meetings, so you can always listen as well what was discussed. As said, there are numerous public comment periods that take place in the different phases of a policy development process where you're encouraged to provide your input and help inform the deliberations of the working group or inform the council when they're looking at the recommendations. As I explained before, the GNSO community is built around a number of constituencies and stakeholder groups. If you feel that your interests align with one of those groups, for example, the business constituency or IPC, or you consider yourself a non-commercial user, you might want to check out what those groups, what their priorities are, what their focus are, and you might want to join forces and work within those environments within the GNSO. We do have, as a policy department, a policy update that comes out on a monthly basis that provides a very good overview of the latest developments in the different policy areas. And I think it's a good guidance as well to see where there are opportunities to join initiatives or provide input. And there will be, I think at the end of the presentation, you'll get the link on where you can sign up for that. And that's being made available in different languages. So and with that, I'll hand it back to Scott.
Thank you very much, Marika. You have now gotten some orientation about what the generic name supporting organization does. Now to explain what the country code name supporting organization does, we're going to hear from Bart Boswinkel, our senior policy advisor for the CCNSO. The floor is yours, Bart.
Thank you, Scott. Good evening, all. Looking at the list of attendance of this webinar, I see a lot of people who I think are not intimately familiar with the CCNSO itself. So what I'll do in this this part of the presentation, I will go into a bit in the structure of the CCNSO itself, the activities of the CCNSO, which are not limited to policy development. Talk a bit about the policy development process in the CCNSO and based on a comparison with the GNSO. So it's building on the picture Marika just has painted, and go into its limitations and show you how to participate in the activities of the CCNSO. So what is the CCNSO, or what is the structure of the CCNSO? The CCNSO, in fact, has two entities. One is what is called the membership, and the second one is the CCNSO Council. Looking at the membership, this is open only to CCTLD managers on a voluntary basis, and currently, as of today, there are 106 members, so you see it's gradually growing, and if you look at, say, the membership itself or the members, we have about 240-plus CCTLDs. So 106 of them are members, and if you look at them, that represents approximately 90% of all the domain names, or they manage approximately 90% of all the domain names registered under CCTLDs, and the membership of the CCTLDs is very diverse. It runs from DNIC, the manager for .de, which is the second largest TLD, which has more than 30 million domain names registered, to some very, very small ones, which have 900 or less domain names registered. And within the CCNSO, they all have the same voice. If you look at the role of the members, it's particular that they have they elect the members to the councillors, so that's 15 out of 18. They are involved in the selection of the two board members appointed by the CCNSO, and they have a specific role in the policy development process, which I will address to you in more. We'll go into more in detail. The meetings of the and working groups of the CCNSO are open to members and non-members. So, if you would attend one of the meetings of the CCNSO at an ICANN meeting, what you will see both members and non-members of the CCTL or CCTLD managers who are members and non-members. And the members or non-members can participate in all the working groups, and they can participate in the policy development process as well. The real distinction is what I just said. They can't vote, and they can't. They don't participate in the elections. Looking at the CCNSO Council itself, its role is more administrative. They manage and administer all the processes and in the CCNSO, and the and the meetings themselves. The council meetings are generally very short and always at the end of the sessions of the CCNSO. The main focus of CCNSO meetings is the members' meeting. So that's probably again a difference with the GNSO. So what does the CCNSO do? It engages, in fact, in a wide variety of activities. In fact, everything that the CCTLD community, so both members and non-members, think is of interest to them, and with one exception, it is there needs to be a global perspective. So that is from information sharing to building best practices, looking into specific areas like wildcarding or setting up the incident response planning. So that is not directly related to policy. A second activity is, in fact, policy recommendations to the ICANN board. And the third major point, I would say, is coordinating with other supporting organizations and advisory committees. From a CCNSO perspective, the Governmental Advisory Committee and the Security and Stability Advisory Committee are of specific relevance, but there are also liaisons with the at large and other groups within the ICANN community. So looking at the policy development in the CCNSO itself, how is it run? If there is an issue that is of relevance from a global perspective, it can be raised by either members of the CCNSO, by one of the regional organizations, and a regional organization is a regional organization either in the European area, the Asian Pacific area, Africa or Latin America. These regional organizations are not associated with ICANN, but CCTLD CCTLD managers in each of these regions can be members of these regional organizations as well. And if there is, for instance, an issue in one of the regions, they can raise it up to the CCNSO Council as a starting point for a potential policy development process. Until now, it never happened. So you know, this can this is one of the possibilities. And of course, the ICANN board itself can raise an issue, or the CCNSO Council itself. The next step in the whole process is that the CCNSO Council needs to take two decisions, in fact, is whether or not to have a issue report prepared, and secondly, and this is probably another major difference with the GNSO process, they have to appoint an issue manager, and this person can be either an ICANN staff person or somebody from who's not associated with ICANN. There are some consequences to this, but so there is this choice for the CC community, or particularly the CCNSO Council, to do this. Now, the issue manager will prepare an issue report and will advise whether or not to appoint a task force or working group, and the issue report needs to include a tentative timeline for the process. A difference with the GNSO process is that if you look at the policy development process as it is defined in the bylaws, it only has minimum timelines. And this is one of the reasons why policy development processes in the steps in the policy development process of the CCNSO are geared towards the public ICANN meetings in each of the regions. So every step is focused around face-to-face meetings and to optimize public participation, especially from the CCTLD community. Going back to the issue report, based on the issue report, the council decides to launch a policy development process. The next steps in the process is, again, as I said, the next phases are the interim and final report prepared by an issue manager. This is the public consultation process. There is no role during these two phases for the CCNSO Council. This is really driven by the issue manager and driven by the ICANN meetings and the timeline in the issues report. Once the final report has been submitted to the council will vote on it again, and this is with a quorum and a regional representation quorum. So as you may know, the ICANN geographic regions play a important role at the level of the CCNSO Council, and at least two out of three councillors from every region needs to be present at the voting. If the council adopts the recommendations from the final report, it goes into a members' vote. And as I said when I started this part of the presentation, this is one of the main differences between being a member of the CCNSO or not a member of the CCNSO. Only members can vote on the recommendations, and they have the ultimate voice in whether or not a recommendation will be submitted to the board. So if the members approve and adopt the recommendations of the PDP, the recommendations will go to the board, and after adoption by the board, they can be implemented. Probably one of the other differences between the CCNSO policies and the GNSO policies is that after adoption, the CCNSO policy is only applicable to members of the CCNSO. It is by their membership that they abide to the policies, and it is not through individual arrangement between ICANN and the CCTLD managers. So this was in the past one of the reasons some CCTLD managers felt constrained in joining the CCNSO, but that has, as you could see, has improved considerably over time and the expectations. So what are currently, or what are CCNSO policies, or which issues have been addressed in CCNSO through the CCNSO policy development process? Now, in the past, there has only been one policy development process. That was the change of the ICANN bylaws. This process ran in 2004-2005. So that was the first one. Currently, we have one running. It's on the IDN CCTLDs. This is the overall policy, and it is broader than the fast track. For those of you who were not intimately involved in the fast track in itself and the recommendations of the IDN working group were not developed through a policy development process, but knowing that the policy development process can take considerable time, as an alternative through a board-appointed working group. If you look at the IDN CCTLD policy development process, the core issues are the selection of IDN CCTLDs and the inclusion of CCTLDs in the CCNSO. Now, will there be a policy development in the future? Probably there will be one, and that is most likely will deal with delegation, redelegation, and retirement of CCTLDs. When it will happen, nobody will know, but this is expected to happen in the near future. As you may have noted, the CCNSO only conducted, in fact, one and concluded one PDP, so policy development process. So why is this number so limited? I think if you look at the whole structure and the ideas and concepts, the PDP and the CCPDP is only relevant for a very limited number of predefined global areas. So that means it mostly deals with the direct relation or direct actions of ICANN and a limited number of actions and activities of the CCTLD managers themselves. What is not included and what never, under the current structure, will never be part of a policy development process is, for instance, some of the topics Marika just mentioned, like vertical integration and some of the past policy development processes in the GNSO, like accreditation, who is, and in general, in fact, registration policy. For CCTLDs, this is a local matter. Say they run, the CCTLDs will run their own local policy development processes regarding these, topics related to registration of domain names. Probably another reason why the CCNSO has only used the policy development in such a limited fashion is they have alternative means available. For instance, guidelines and direct advices to the ICANN board. One of the two best examples which have had direct impact are the guidelines on the accountability frameworks, on the relation between CCTLDs and ICANN. These guidelines were turned into what is now called the Exchange of Letters and Accountability Framework by ICANN staff, and the second one is the Model for Financial Contributions for CCTLDs to ICANN. Again, these were guidelines and implemented by ICANN and by the CCTLDs to structure the financial contributions. And going back to the limited use of policies, I noted, the policies are developed through the policy development in the CCNSO are only applicable to CCNSO members, and even if they would apply to CCNSO members, there is always the general exception for the application for applying the results because of local law and public and local public policy, which is also always paramount, and there is a very general exception rule if a policy would breach local customs, etc. So even then, a policy could not and would not apply. I think even given the limited nature, there are alternative means, and the CCNSO is very active in different areas, and they participate with SOs and ACs. The CCNSO meetings are always, and the CCNSO is open and always welcomes participation from other constituencies. So how could you get involved in the CCNSO if there is anything of interest? Now, first of all, you can attend the CCNSO meetings themselves. They are always open, either remotely or attend physically the meetings themselves, so the face-to-face meetings. You can participate in workshop. Most of the workshops are open, and you can participate in the public comments processes. This is not just limited to the policy development processes. Some of the CCNSO working groups are also open for public comment. And, of course, through local processes, most CCTLDs run in their own country or territory their own policy development processes and seek input on both their own registration policy, but also on global issues, and you could participate through, say, the local processes, so the in-country. I think that's it, so I hand over to you, Scott.
Thank you very much, Bart. Thanks for a peek at how country code top-level domain policy is developed internationally. By now, you're probably getting the picture that we have three main supporting organizations that develop policy. So you've heard from the generic name supporting organization and the country code name supporting organization. Next, we're going to hear from the address supporting organization, from our Director of Services Relations and the branch manager of our Brussels office, Olaf Nordling. Welcome to the webinar, Olaf.
Thank you very much, Scott, and I hope I managed to unmute myself.
Yeah.
Fine. Now, let's then it's time for the last N in the ICANN name, and that stands for numbers, and with that we mean internet addresses, autonomous system numbers, and those, well, they certainly need policy as well for the handling of them, for allocation, how much, to whom, and when. So that is the realm of the Address Supporting Organization, ASO. And let's have a closer look at that. Now, ASO is a unique entity in the ICANN family because it's set up through a memorandum of understanding between ICANN and another organization called the NRO, Number Resource Organization. So in a sense, it's an interface organization between the addressing community and the ICANN. And we'll get back to how that works. But one major task of the ASO is to take care of what's called global policies. And global policies are addressing policies that affect IANA's handling of addressing resources. Rob has mentioned that, well, we act as a source for all IP addresses, and that's handled by the so-called IANA function, which is within ICANN. Well, let's proceed, because this probably raises more questions than it answers. Let's have a look to the addressing community. And here we have the most important part of all that are the RIRs, the Regional Internet Registries, because they receive huge address blocks from IANA, and then they allocate them on the regional level. So they get the addresses in blocks of 16 million IPv4 addresses, typically, and allocate them in turn with their policies to your favorite ISP, and in that way you get a functional IP address for your computer. So quite essential, and this is the food chain, if you like, for the IP addresses. The regional internet registries, as the name indicates, are organized regionally. So there are five of them, one for each continent. You could say AFRINIC for Africa, APNIC for Asia-Pacific, a huge region indeed, ARIN for North America and part of the Caribbean, and LACNIC for Latin America and most of the Caribbean, and then RAI for Europe and the Middle East. Now, these five organizations do cooperate through the NRO, the Number Resource Organization, which I just mentioned, which is the other signatory with ICANN to the ASO-MOU. Now, policy development, that's really a matter which happens within the RIRs. They develop numerous policies for regional applications, and they do that through their own bottom-up processes. They all have them. They are slightly different with regional touches, but they all have very well-established bottom-up policy development processes. A few of the policies, they do affect IANA's allocation of addressing resources, and only those are called global policies. They may be policies which happen to be similar all across the regional internet registries, but they're never called global policies in this context. They're called coordinated policies. So it's important to keep that in mind. And the global policies, in order to have global effect, meaning that they would affect IANA's allocation to all the RIRs, they have to be agreed in all RIRs to start with, and in the same way, meaning with the same policy approach in all our RIRs. Once you reach that stage, they are then channeled through the ASO, the ASO Address Council, as it's called, and then ratified by the ICANN board before being implemented by IANA. For example, Rob mentioned the global policy for IPv6, which states the size of the initial allocations of IPv6 addresses and the, which should be handled through the RIRs. And that went all through this process, finally being then adopted by the ICANN board and was 2 years ago implemented by IANA. So the first blocks of IP addresses were then handed out to all the RIRs. Now, having heard all this, how do I get involved? Well, if you're really interested in the magic world of binary zeros and ones, which has a lot of interesting aspects to it, for all those addressing policies, you have one and only one advice, and that is to participate in the bottom-up policy development in the RIR, which is in your region, or handling your region. Because, and that's easy, all the RIRs, they have their bottom-up policy development processes, which encompass open meetings a couple of times yearly, and where the policy proposals are discussed, and all have open mailing lists for the policy development. So that's my final advertisement. If you're interested in this, then go to your local RIR, get in touch with them, and see to that you become part of this process. And with that, I think I'll hand it back to you, Scott, as anchorman for the and master of ceremonies, to take over.
Thank you very much, Olaf. So you've probably seen by now, we hold high regard for our supporting organizations because they're the ones who make actual policy recommendations to the ICANN board, who then approves or doesn't approve them. But there are many other ways to get involved besides just being involved with the supporting organizations. As you've heard us allege, there are a number of advisory committees, and oftentimes the reason that a supporting organization is treating a particular issue in policy is because one of the advisory committees brought it up. So let me briefly show what those advisory committees are. One of them is the At-Large Advisory Committee. At-Large is responsible for considering and providing advice on ICANN activities that relate to the interests of individual Internet users, who we often refer to as the at-large community. So if you have a particular interest in how Internet policy affects individuals, you might want to look into At-Large, and there is a link there so you can learn more. We also have a governmental advisory committee. This is comprised of appointed representatives of national governments, multinational governmental organizations and treaty organizations, and distinct economies. And the function of the governmental advisory committee is to advise the ICANN board on matters of concern to governments. So again, if you are a government representative, then the GAC may be a place you'd like to get involved. The Security and Stability Advisory Committee has a fairly self-explanatory name. It's the Standing Committee on the Security and Stability of the Internet's Naming and Address Allocation Systems. Their charter includes a focus on risk analysis and auditing, and they address lots of issues just to make sure that the DNS in general stays strong. So if you're a network security professional, you might want to get involved with the FSAC. And then finally, the Root Server System Advisory Committee provides advice on the operational requirements of the root name servers that anchor the entire domain name system. So these are the advisory committees that also advise the ICANN board and the ICANN community. There are also plenty of other ways to get involved. For example, you could apply for an ICANN fellowship. An ICANN fellowship is basically a grant, and it's awarded to enable individuals from around the world to attend ICANN meetings. This is a means-tested program. So in other words, an applicant has to be a citizen of an economically eligible country according to the World Bank's classification of which economies are low, lower middle, and upper middle. So you can see the link there if you'd like to learn more. You could also apply for an ICANN leadership position. We've referred a few times to the nominating committee. That is basically a group that is always searching for qualified people to help ICANN's mission. So again, you can follow the link there to learn more. Alternatively, we would love to see you in person at our next international meeting, which will be held in Brussels, June 20th to 25th. We hold three such international meetings per year, and they rotate continents. But they are free to attend, so please, if you're inclined to join us, you may do so. Lastly, if you would like to just sort of keep an eye on developments for a while before you figure out how to involve yourself in ICANN, consider reading our monthly publication policy update. In fact, the May issue will be going up in the next couple of days. You can read it online or receive it in your inbox, and we publish it in 6 languages. So visit our site. You can get a free subscription or just read it right there in your browser. So with that, that pretty much lists all the different ways you can get involved in ICANN. And we conclude now the speakers portion of this session, and we would like to open the floor to any questions you might have. So now is the time you can choose to unmute yourself or raise your hand or submit a question in the chat box, and we will love to respond. While you're composing your questions, I thought I'd mention the international characteristic of this presentation today. You have heard from both coasts of the United States, from Brussels, and from the Netherlands. So I'm always impressed at how Adobe Connect can bring together a global audience. And we are still awaiting questions if you have any. I now see one from Adam Prom. What is ICANN's stance on the continuance of the UN's Internet Governance Forum? Which of our policy people would like to respond to that one?
This is Rob. I'm not offering to respond to that question, but noting that that's probably a more appropriate question for members of our global partnerships team, but we'd be glad, Adam, to take that and pass it on to them so that they can follow up with you on that.
Sad to say, Adam, it is not actually a policy question, so we don't have any particular expertise on addressing it. I now see a question from Pamela Gallant. Does ICANN play any role in promoting access or accessibility in developing countries? The short answer to that is no, not really. Probably the closest we come is simply encouraging people from economically challenged countries to attend our meetings through the fellowship program. But building out infrastructure is not actually something we do. We're focused on the domain name system and IP addressing. Thank you for the question. I hear more typing in the background, so I'll give it just a moment in case that is an incoming question. All right, hearing no further questions, I think we're going to call it a session. Thank you very much for your attention, and just to repeat, there are lots of resources online where you can learn more about ICANN, and all these slides will be available. If you visit our homepage and then look for the e-learning tab, you'll be able to follow it to a recording of this presentation. Thank you very much for your time and attention today, and that concludes our meeting.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, and good evening, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Scott, have a look at my last comment, please. Cheryl.
Yes, I'm still here.
Just thinking about it, the duration, be nice not only just to have a full archive, but if we could somehow package it into